pivoting and you're now moving to TA questions.
Yes, that's correct. Good afternoon, Mr. Palsmaker. Can I ask you please to turn to page 28 of your supplementary evidence? And I'm looking at your paragraph 61 and the reservations you express about Mr. Tuz's alternative relief. I'd like to talk to you particularly about your paragraph 61C and your concern that the assessment may not account for environmental effects arising from community water supply takes being granted for durations up to 2035. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, I suppose, ways that we might fix that. Would it be an option for consent for community water supplies to be required under the operative provisions as well as Plan Change 7 so that the environmental effects matters that are picked up in the regional plan water can be addressed, but also the matters that Mr. Tuz includes in his rule associated with the likes of efficiency improvements and so on, that he sought to include effectively as a nod to the NPS FM. Would that be a possibility?
Can I take... I'm just going to go back to Mr. Tuz.
Certainly.
His proposed rule...
So, 10A3 1A.2.
So, because I actually thought it was really well crafted, the rule. I found it with a lot of things, but the matters that were addressed through the rule, as Mr. Tuz proposed it, seemed to focus on managing the demand side of water. I couldn't find anything in there that really deals with the effects of the taking itself on the water body. So that was where I was coming from when I stated that.
Yes.
Also, Mr. Tuz's rule applies to both new takes, not previously consented, and takes that were intended to be captured by Plan Change 7. So it was kind of like an amalgamation, and I thought in that respect the rule was falling a little bit short. Mm. I pointed out an alternative option that if, similar as what I did with the hydro schemes, like if the court is minded to go and provide for these, this is something that they could do. And I kind of abandoned the RDA pathway. The key reason being is in both the case of community water supplies and hydro schemes, it's really hard to kind of predict what the effects are and actually what the type of activities are. With the hydro schemes as well, like they're so diverse in some are diversions, retakes, takes. And the same with community water supplies. The activities themselves, especially when it comes to the end use, can be so diverse. And I think in a situation like that, where it's really hard to predict what effects you have to address, the discretionary pathway might be a more appropriate way of dealing with it.
That was going to be my next question.
Oh, sorry.
is if there may be two options to address the concern that you had. One might be to have the rule under Plan Change 7 essentially additive to the existing rule regime in the regional plan water, instead of an entirely alternative regime as it is proposed to be currently, or, as I think you've identified, making the activity status fully discretionary, so the full suite of potential effects can be taken into account when an application is made. Do you agree with that?
Yep.
At your point of clarification, really, your paragraph 62, subparagraph B, you indicate there hasn't been information provided by other community water supply providers. Do you mean other than the territorial
Correct.
Authorities?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought that was really helpful, actually, to have that information. From the territorial authorities.
Yeah. Following on from that paragraph, in paragraph C, you talk about the concerns raised by Ms. Muir about the potential for changes in reliability and availability of water. And you effectively suggest that the territorial authorities should just put all of their infrastructure planning on ice, awaiting future development strategies or the outcomes in the land and water plan. And I suppose I'm interested in testing how that can possibly be appropriate given the obligations that the territorial authorities have to provide water supply. And the implications of a period of things sitting on ice. Now, you might recall that both Ms. Muir and Ms. McGurr discussed the periods of time that it took for projects relating to water supply to evolve.
Yeah.
Both of them talked about that being a number of years. And so if councils were to do as you suggest and just simply wait for at least, I suppose, 4 years currently, assuming the land and water plan becomes operative in 2025, and if we accept their evidence that projects will take a number of years to develop, it could be that we're towards the end of this decade before the territorial authorities can deliver on water supply projects. Do you accept that?
A little bit more nuanced than that. I think, from memory, what you're saying is correct, but also when it comes to meeting their obligations under the NPSUD or just simply responding to demand, future demand for water, my understanding was that the current consents actually provide for sufficient, they have sufficient headspace already in them. The majority of the planned projects rely on consents that are not expiring within the term of Plan Change 7. So I think the problem isn't really there, in a sense that they cannot respond to needs, to the need for water. The real problem is that they cannot progress their planned projects. Yeah.
I'd like to discuss your proposed alternative rule, which is on page 32. And I want to understand exactly what you were intending to capture. So if we look at your rule 10A.3.1B.1 and your paragraph A, where we talk about any activity that is a replacement of an activity authorised under a deemed permit. Both Ms. McGuire and Ms. Muir discussed projects that they had in the pipeline that were to be consented within the life of Plan Change 7 that would move, take locations,
yeah,
or even source water bodies. Now, those applications are, in effect, a replacement of an existing take, but wouldn't be a replacement of the same take. Are you intending, and this was the genesis of, I suppose, Mr. Toos's suggested amendment, and the TA's understanding that those types of changes would necessitate new consents.
Correct.
As opposed to a variation, you mean?
Or as opposed to a replacement, which is catered for in the rule that Mr. De Palsemaker has proposed.
So what's the proposition? I'm interested in this, for the same reason you're interested in this. So what's the proposition? An application to relocate a point of take for obviously an existing authorised activity is a new resource consent and not a replacement nor a variation.
Yes, so and this is where the devil is so often in the detail. And it's perhaps easiest to talk about it by way of example.
Yeah.
So the Luggett take,
yeah,
currently taken from a surface water body.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal is to replace that take with a groundwater bore, so mm-hmm. moving source water bodies.
Is it hydraulically connected water or gallery bore, or is it from a deep aquifer? Or what?
So it's from it. How long is a piece of string? I suppose the groundwater. Zone is adjacent to the Clutha River, so is hydraulically connected to the Clutha.
Are they regarded as two different water bodies under the regional plan?
Effectively, yes.
Managed as two different water bodies?
They're managed one under a suite of takes from groundwater, and then obviously the surface water rules relating to takes directly from the Clutha. From memory, the rules associated with the groundwater takes do factor in the potential stream depleting effects of the groundwater take, but they're not managed as a single water resource per se. The source water body for the Luggett currently meets with Luggett Creek and then ultimately to the Clutha. But again, by the same mechanism in the operative plan, you would be applying under the different rule frameworks that manage the groundwater and the surface water. So our understanding is that it wouldn't be possible to transfer the permit from the surface water body to the groundwater take. So if in effect the groundwater take has to be applied for as a new activity, albeit it is replacing the water permit that has previously served that community water supply.
And that's your understanding, you want to check that through Mr. the Pulsemaker?
Yes, yeah. And whether or not in his drafting, when he's referring to replacements, whether that is replacing the exact consent and in its take point, or whether it is replacing the water that is being provided for that community water supply, albeit from a different water source or take location.
Okay, I'm just making a replacing up volume. All right, so
can you just
take
us back to the rule?
Mr. De Pulsemaker's rule. So if you look at page 32 of his supplementary evidence, he's proposed a new discretionary activity rule, 10A.3.1B1, and you'll see in his paragraphs A and B, they both refer to the replacement of an activity authorised under a deemed permit or a taken use of surface water that is a replacement of a take-in use authorised by an existing permit. So, Mr. De Pulsemaker?
Yeah, I'm just... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy you raised that question. Like I said, it was very useful to have actually the information from the TAs and being able to see what they're proposing. And it occurred to me that indeed you are correct, that the majority of the planned projects, while they're intended to replace consents, they are consolidations of schemes or upgrades. And talking to the consents team about it as well, it would be a new consent. It would be a new activity. It wouldn't be a strict replacement. That being said, when I recall the evidence of Ms. Muir as well, she was talking to the Omaha scheme, where it appeared that everything seemed to be up in the air a little bit again. So what I tried to do was to provide for two situations where there's a need for a straightforward replacement of a consent, which is addressed through this rule, and also through policy 10A23, where that is not the case, also make provision for a longer-term consent, more than 6 years, through an amendment, a suggested amendment under policy 10A22. Because Plan Change 7, the way it is set up is that actually when it's a new, when it's an application for a new activity, it still is considered under the rules of the operative plan, except that the duration policy under 10A22 applies. So it tries to cater, this framework tries to cater for the two situations.
Okay,
this, yeah.
Slow that down. So the policy that you're talking about, where it's not a straight out replacement, but it's some. Something else? Give me that policy reference. This is your new policy.
It's on the top of page 31, policy 10A22. So I deliberately changed the two policies, recognizing that it is actually not as, in some of the cases that were presented, it might not pan out as a straight rollover, but rather as a new activity, acknowledging that the scale of the activity would not always be more. Like, actually, where there is a consolidation, they're actually not asking for more water.
Okay, so, and you convey that by your new words, where this activity was not previously authorised by a deemed permit.
Correct.
Okay. So, whereas new activities are to be authorised under the operative water plan, save in relation to duration, which is what
this policy applies.
So you're saying this policy applies to a duration only.
Correct. So the first the first two policies actually apply to duration only.
Okay.
But policy 10A22 applies to the duration in respect of consents for new activities. Policy 10A23 applies to the duration for activities that are currently authorized by the permit or an expiring permit. And that's that is following the setup of Plan Change 7 as it is proposed.
I guess with my, and this may or may not be why Ms. Irving, where Ms. Irving's coming from. If you've got a straight out carve out, if you like, for either new TA activities or replacement TA activities, it's just a carve out in terms of duration, why would you have a fully discretionary rule? Because then that suddenly imports matters of effects about which this plan's got nothing to say in particular.
You're absolutely correct.
So why wouldn't you take it down a different activity pathway which would not allow for those considerations? Because after all, for new consents, aren't they picked up in your water plan anyway?
That is picked up in the water plan. The controlled activity rule and the RDA, as such, they only provide for 6 years' time. So the other option would be have them as a non-complying activity.
No, I was thinking maybe another option could be possibly having them as a... And you have to think about this. If it's a replacement consent, having it as a RD where you're excluding considerations of effects on environment, if you're happy with that, you know, like for like, that's a true replacement. RD and limited matters of discretion. Not full discretion where you're going, golly, what's the metric by which I'd actually examine the effects? If there are truly new activities, as you have discussed, they just get processed anyway under the operative plan with a different carve-out in duration under this plan.
That is a possibility as well. Mm. I thought because we're giving them essentially 15-year consents, it might be appropriate actually to consider environmental effects. That was my thinking.
That's right, because as Ms. McIntyre said on Tuesday, duration's not neutral. And I tend to agree with her on that duration isn't neutral. But then comes the issue of the value of what Mr. Twos is saying, and I think you can see a lot of value there. Anyway, sorry, I've clarified in my own mind how this all works. Mm. I don't know whether that's where you're going, but I now know how it works, so that's good.
Yeah, it's it was something that was developing as I was doing my Section 32. Are there any other options that... My preference would still be 6-year consents, and not because I want to be particularly hard-nosed about it, but what Ms. Muir said I think applies to a lot of schemes that rely on large infrastructure. When it comes to a review, it is problematic. It's really hard, costly to retrofit those in that infrastructure, and that kind of made me thinking, ideally, we should reconsent them for a 6-year term and ask to defer that investment. But
it could be more nuanced than that then. If the concern is the applicant is upscaling its infrastructure and hardwiring that infrastructure into the plan in such a way that, you know, if there needs to be a response to quantity and quality, and this very much may apply to OFA and the infrastructure out there, you'd want to be discouraging that at this point in time. But if it was a straight-out replacement, possibly a different approach.
If it's straight-out,
already in the ground.
Yeah. then it, yeah, I don't see why you would make it different from the controlled activity pathway, you know, if it's straight out replacement, yeah. It's you're playing a little bit with the unknown.
I know.
And on one hand, reading the evidence of the TAs gave me confidence that in a lot of instances there's not going to be an increase in effects and perhaps in some ways even a benefit. Intake infrastructures themselves have an impact on different values. If you're consolidating that, you remove some of the impacts. But then there's also the unknown, like sometimes projects change, and we've heard that through the hearing. So, yeah, that's where I was coming from.
Does that perhaps not point to the need for Plan Change 7 to provide a pathway for these projects? That where there are the likes of consolidations and so on that may reduce effects, and those will be enabled by virtue of a pathway for consents longer than 6 years.
You mean on a merits effects based assessment?
Absolutely.
Who's put up the policy to look at the effects of those activities, though?
Well, I think this is the question and the why I'm exploring the framework that would apply to the new takes vis-a-vis direct replacements.
When you say new takes, you mean replacements or?
Well, they are takes in new places.
Takes in new places.
That are serving existing community water supply needs.
But
so
those
they're replacing the water.
They could potentially generate environmental effects.
They could.
New environmental effects. Which
they could. They could also have the effect of reducing.
Yeah, sure, but you'd need a full merits-based assessment, and the question is, against what metric would you be looking at it? And as I understand, the structure of this plan is to allow that for new permits, as opposed to like replacements, to go under the old plan. At least you'd have some, as impoverished as it may be, some assessment of effects out on that plan. But it wouldn't be happening on this plan, not on the relief which is now put up.
Yes, so long as there's that policy gateway to enable the longer durations longer than 6 years on those new permits.
I don't know. I don't know. I know what you're saying.
Because the fundamental issue, I think, for the territorial authorities, based on the 10A 2.2 as notified, was that those new replacements could not be granted for more than 6 years. Mm. That was the effect of the policy. So if there is a pathway
But then the proposition is, could we have long-term consents to take water from a different water body? And that could be highly problematic if that water body is already over-allocated.
Or it might not be.
Or it might not be.
Where that pathway is important, the opportunity to look at that.
And I understand that. I just don't see how this plan is delivering it. Carry on.
I just want to clarify, in preparing this supplementary brief of evidence, have you had regard to the proposed regional policy statement?
That would not to a level that I want to comment on it now. I had a look at it, but I was working on the understanding that there was going to be an additional brief of evidence, and
6 pages.
So that, I suppose the point
that,
I was just...
That's at 11.5 font, should I say, or 12 font, single-sided.
So that this, the relief that you proposed hasn't yet taken into account the identification of community water supplies as regionally significant infrastructure.
No.
I have no further questions.
All right, thank you. Ms. Bob, you're good. Ms. Dixon, questions? Oh, you don't have any questions? No, no. Oh, sorry. All right. Okay. Re-examination. All right. Commissioner Edmonds.
You can start with me.
Yep. Oh, I don't mind. You can start with me if you like. But
oh, good day. Yep. I always have discussions with my colleagues. I have a couple of questions about
I do, yes. Yep.
And I have interpreted it differently from my colleagues, and I think they have see about where community water supply and hydro fitted into 10A4.
Yep. So they are captured by Schedule 10A4.
Yes.
They are. The only exception is that under Step 4, they are excluded from the method of removing atypical data. The rationale behind that is in the case of hydro, the rationale behind it is because their maximum, their peaks in taking are determined by climate events, some heavy rainfall events, so they have less opportunity to illustrate through the take records a pattern that reflects their historical use. What seems atypical might actually be reflecting their need. In the case of community water supplies, atypical data could be legitimate because of a community event. I think we were playing with the example of an AMP show in a small rural community. That would have a spike in water use. And so if we would eliminate that, we could constrain them in that regard. So that was the rationale behind removing atypical data from Step 4. Other than that, the schedule applies.
Yeah, because I went back to the joint witness statement for the technical people, and it said that hydro and community could be assessed on the atypical data front on a case-by-case basis. So it didn't suggest that it would be necessarily eliminated, but it would be considered.
Yeah.
And that's not reflected in the actual 10A4.
And there might be a discrepancy between what's actually there and how it's been recorded in the JWS, but yeah, that is my understanding of the reasoning behind it. And I think there was some, there was agreement between the parties of excluding the removal of atypical data.
Because I was just a little bit confused with the way there was no thought that maybe Schedule 10A4 could have benefited from some small reference to... apart from that, taking out steps four,
Because
my initial reading of that, and I was incorrect in that, was that they weren't included in the schedule, but of course they are.
They are. The only reference, is at the bottom of step four, really, that mentions community water supplies. I think it's implicit in the fact that we removed the words for irrigation purposes.
At the top, yes.
At the top?
Yes, yes.
But it is implicit, so,
I still found it a wee bit confusing. And then step five, presumably, does that apply to community water and...
That applies to all takes, regardless, yeah.
Because that wasn't all that obvious because it seemed to be within the context of irrigation only. That was all.
Yeah.
I just wondered whether some little clarification there might, for in the future, when people have forgotten how they put it all together, it might help.
You mean like an advice note or something?
Would you like us to provide you with some wording?
Some word would.
And that could be done perhaps through the JWS?
So how do you mean through the... this is on Monday when you're coming
when you're
there.
Chatting to other folk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would...
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind, please, yes. And there were some other... one or two just editorial things, and I think you've picked some of them up, but maybe not picked them all up. Do you want me to give those to you now? I could do that.
Happy to do that, yes.
So... if we go to 10A4.1, the methodology, and in item 4, it talks about rounding down in the second line, and I think you've used the term adjusted somewhere in other places.
Yes, indeed it is still there, should be
so
adjusted.
So that's just a point of detail.
Yeah.
And, of course, the comments on hydro and community water go through the rate of take, daily, hourly volume stuff as well. I'll just see if there's anything else. Yes, under 10A4.3, in fact, this goes back to each part of the rates, volumes, and so on. The heading is methodology, and yet at the end of the third line, it just says method. So, wondering methodology might be a more consistent use. And then the methodology itself there, and under step two or item two, sorry. In the third line, the word filtered is used, whereas I think in other places it's used the word calculated. So that was just a consistency. And I think that might have been in a couple of other places as well. And then in 10A4.4, methodology under item 2, it starts with actual annual volumes. Is the word actual, should that be there? Because the term above is annual volume, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just consistency of terminology, perhaps.
Yes. I think the reason why the word actual is still used there is because it's to signal that the annual volumes refers to in the... in the first couple of words of step two, they could actually be different from the annual volume limit that comes out at the end of the whole process.
Okay, so you...
But it might... I will come back to you
just have a look at
on that on Monday.
And so those comments just apply to each of the, the rates, monthly, daily, and so on, just to ensure consistency throughout.
Yeah.
I think that was all. Thank you, Your Honour.
Commissioner is saying there's a sanity check and hard proofreading. Okay. If you could do that.
Yeah.
Because I'd prefer not to.
Are you comfortable with me liaising with?
Absolutely. Yeah. Liaising with the other planners.
And Mr. Wilson.
Well, the technical people, yes.
Sure.
Yeah,
that would be essential. Yeah.
Because you've got the guts of it there. I mean, I don't think that's going to change. It's just it's just one final hard check on the language.
Yeah.
So, 5, where you're talking about the margin of error to be applied to any calculation, that's repeated up in step 4. That's the only place where it talks about calculating the number of other data values which are within the margin of error of that value. So my question is, having that as a general proposition in 5, is that correct, or is the situations where you apply the margin of error much narrower than just having it in 5, where it might imply that it relates to the whole 9 yards?
I'm really sorry. Could you repeat? I've missed the first bit of the question.
Well, if you could just have a look at 5, which talks about the margin of error.
In which
and
schedule?
It says to be applied to any calculation. So I've gone and had a look to see to try and understand what is meant by that, and I've found the only place where a margin of error is specifically referred to, I'm just looking at the rate of take here, but the same principle applies, is under step 4, which of course we've already heard that this step 4 is supposed to be about irrigation, and looking at 4E, that refers to calculating the number of other data values which are within the margin of error of that value. And F also refers to applying a margin of error. But my question is, is that the beginning and the end of it, E and F? And might this 5 imply that it applies to all of these measurements and calculations? I think there's very likely a difference between measurement and calculation. So I just think there needs to be a good hard look at this.
Yeah.
And if this margin of error application to a calculation only applies to 4E and F, then that should be made clear.
Yeah. I'll have a look at that and then we'll get back to you. Yep.
So I suppose I'm wondering whether step 5 is really a step or whether it's just amplification of what it is you have to do under some elements of 4.
That is something that I need to clarify, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, no,
Wilson.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yes. So I just wanted to be sure that I was absolutely clear what it was you were suggesting. In terms of hydro and the community water supplies. So perhaps we could start with the hydro. So you've got two alternatives that you've put in front of us, your preferred one and then something else. So I just want to be clear that I fully understand what they are. If we could just have a look at the hydro one to begin with. So Hydro could choose to go down the controlled activity route?
Absolutely.
Right, and then we've already talked about how the schedule might apply then, and it's a more limited part of the schedule. Or it could decide to go down the restricted...
Correct.
...discretionary route, and if it does that... how does that relate to the historical use point? Does it relate to that or
Correct.
Not?
So Hydro could go down the controlled activity route if it decides they are fine with a six-year term and they are comfortable with applying the schedule to determine historical use.
Right.
If they are okay with a six-year term, but they want either to take into account data, water use data, post 30th of June 2020, or they want to use alternative data or have determination of historical use based on synthetic flows or flow gaugings, then the option is RDA as well. So six-year terms applies to both controlled and RDA.
Right.
It's only when they go for a longer term that they could apply a discretionary activity rule.
So that's your proposition, discretionary.
I try to be helpful and I think point out that there's an alternative. Because in both cases, Hydro and Community Water Supplies, the relief that was sought was much wider than the cases that were presented a little bit. That was my feeling. Or could have consequences beyond the cases themselves. And that's what I try to do, really, with the alternative.
And then the notion of having a schedule of particular
activities.
Consents or activities, or and you've given us the shape of what that might look like. So, what activity status are you suggesting for that?
Oh, that would
for
be
that
linked,
schedule.
That would be linked to the discretionary activity, the schedule, because there's a direct link.
Yeah, no, fine. I'm just making sure that I'm clear.
Yeah.
So I guess my next question after that is, you didn't consider that a restricted discretionary activity might be appropriate.
It might, like...
Using that schedule approach.
Yes, that could work as well. The reason why I went for a DA... fully discretionary is... I actually talked to the consents officers and I said, like, what would you look for if you had this kind of activity? And they said, could have various effects. It's really hard to predict with an irrigation take. It's fairly simple. Water is taken either for storage and then being used or directly for irrigation for a particular land use. With hydro and with community water supplies, it's much harder to predict the activity or the exact nature of the activity. And I think in that regard, that's where I decided to go discretionary activity, to be able to better respond to the particular aspects of a proposal. Whereas in RDA, you limit yourself a little bit.
So the hydro ones that are in your schedule, we had quite a lot of evidence about that.
Yep.
And it sounded like quite a fixed kind of activity, if you like, the way that it's all designed.
It is fixed, yeah.
So I guess my question is, in terms of considering that under a restricted discretionary activity situation, would it not be possible to craft that in a way that you might pick up anything if there is anything that may need dealing with?
It might be possible, yes. Yeah.
So what kinds of things are you thinking ought to be, might be dealt with here? Going back to the evidence about what these activities actually are.
Given that they are not in a planning sense, or not according to the definition of non-consumptive takes in the plan, they don't meet that definition or in the water metering regulations, but in a way they are non-consumptive. A lot of those water takes just mean that the water is being transferred or diverted into a different water body. You would probably focus on things like rate of take, it probably wouldn't be too dissimilar in the case of hydro from the matters of control that are in the controlled activity rule. I'm relying on my memory a little bit here.
I'm just asking the question as to why there's why restricted discretionary might not be an appropriate consenting pathway.
Mm. Yeah, given that you have an existing activity, there's no change to the scale of it. We're not anticipating a change in effects, really.
No.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah, so why would it need a discretionary activity consent?
Well, we could
talk
to you
about the duration separately. But
I think... you might actually, you could address it as a restricted discretionary activity. Yeah. I wouldn't want to kind of give you, I would like to, but I'm not sure if I can give you an exhaustive list of all the matters that you would want to consider. I'd feel more comfortable doing that going back to the evidence and actually.
Going back to the transcript and having a
look.
Yes, well, that, of course, is what we'll have to do.
Yeah. I think to answer your question, I think it is possible.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I just wanted to be clear about that. I guess the other question was the duration, and you were asked about that earlier, so I probably don't need to ask about that further.
Yeah.
Yes. So I just want to be clear now on the community water supplies. So again, there's a controlled activity possibility.
Correct.
If that's the route that's chosen for the the 6 years in a very limited, reserved matters of control. And then I'm now looking at the restricted discretionary category,
mm-hmm.
and that's within existing water permit volume and rate limits. So that's your sort of ceiling for your restricted
Correct.
Discretionary
yep.
activity. So I looked at one of those footnotes. I'm going to have trouble finding the right page now. Page 30. And so just looking at your footnote 69 and not taking on board these points about, well, is this a replacement mm-hmm. activity, it looked as though there was a shortfall when you added up those permits relative to what's intended, the total abstraction. Because it says one's got 18,000 cubic metres and then there's another 18 cubic metres and then a new consent with a total of abstraction of up to 20,000 cubic metres.
Yeah.
So there's not quite the headroom in there.
No, that's correct. And I've got this information from the evidence of Ms. Muir. So in this case, my reading is that the consolidation will actually result in a small increase of water compared to what was there previously allowed for under two consents. So it's an increase in the scale. It's not a replacement at all. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So that would mean that it wouldn't come within the restricted discretionary
parameters? No, it would
parameters.
Actually... Sorry. It would be assessed under the rules of the operative plan.
As a new activity.
As a new
activity.
New water.
Yeah.
New activity.
Yeah, because it's essentially a new consent... and the total take would be more than the sum of the two existing ones.
So I guess this is bringing us back to some of the questions that you've already been asked in terms of
mm-hmm.
what you were then suggesting with your discretionary activity category?
The discretionary activity category is basically a safety net. As based on the information that was provided to us, the majority of the planned projects would essentially require new consents that would be assessed as new takes, would come in under the rules of the operative plan. However, when I was thinking back, you never know what's going to happen, and Ms. Muir also indicated that in the case of Omakau, they're back to the drawing board, essentially, for that scheme. So I was providing, therefore, a situation in where TAs would basically look for a rollover of an existing consent connected to the schemes in the schedule that I drew. The two rules for the community water supplies and hydro are kind of mirror images, really, of each other. And I did that also to keep the plan kind of simple.
Well, I've noticed that, but in terms of the policy
yes.
approaches you used, I noticed that you didn't have those as mirror images. And
that's
I
correct.
Guess there's a a drafting principle, I guess it would be fair to say that I struggle to look at policy that reaches down into the rules and imports it back up into the policy. And in the case of one of those things, the hydro one, that's exactly what you've done, because you take us to say, except where rule blah-de-blah blah applies. But you haven't done that with your proposed policy approach to the community water supplies. And I thought it would be easy to expunge your rule reference from the policy. I'm looking at your 23.
Yes.
On page 54, which is your hydro.
That might actually be, that might be an, I was going to call it a typo, but...
well, in principle, do you agree with me?
I agree with you, and the strikeout, the single strikeout above the double underlining should actually be removed. My apologies for that. I did not notice it.
So sorry, what can I...
What page are you on?
We're on page 31.
Mm.
31, are we?
Yep. And what subparagraph?
So under policy 10A...
Well, I
two,
was...
3.
Yep.
So there is right at the end of the first, I would call it paragraph, there is... just above A, there's a double underlining, but a single strikeout above that, and the single strikeout should be removed.
Oh.
My apologies.
Sorry, so you're wanting to put that stuff back in?
Completely lost as to where I'm meant to be looking, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Here we go.
I hope I'm not confusing you.
So page 31, policy 10A23. End of the first paragraph, which says except where, and then we've struck out rule 10A321 and rule 10A3.1B. Here, I've got to stand up.
Don't stand up.
I think did Mr. Tapal's making me say put it back in.
I wasn't actually.
Does that address your concern?
No, I think the Commissioner would not like that.
No. I don't think it's good policy drafting to reach down the plan and grab rules and put them back up into the policy.
Yeah.
And people who've had me on other cases may find me very boring on this, but in Queenstown, we made it a no-no. Yeah.
Okay.
So perhaps there's no point in getting you to look at these degree of detail, because there's usually a way around it.
Yeah,
it actually reads fine without it, without resurrecting it.
And there's several places you've done that, so that's just a general point. And then I did have one other thing which I just think, was it... in your 10A2.2, I'm looking at the red line version in Appendix 2, is it?
Oh.
I think it's Appendix 2. So this used to say only grant, and it became avoid granting.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got for a duration of no more than 6 years.
What page?
Shouldn't it just say for a duration of more than 6 years?
So what page are you on? We're on the one with the red writing.
I'm on the red writing, and the pages weren't numbered, so I've numbered Appendix 2, and this is on my page 5.
Okay, just let me find Appendix 2.
Correct, yes. Yep.
Don't move on. Stop where you are, because I'm not
sorry.
There.
Sorry.
I've just got to find something with red text on it. I've got to find Appendix 2, because I haven't... And which provision are you looking at?
Oh, 10A.2.2.
All right. I'm looking at the red text, and what have you just agreed to?
Well, it's just that
avoid granting.
Yeah. And so because it's been changed to avoid granting,
yep.
It's not right to say for a duration of no more than 6 years. You just need to take out the no, and the witnesses are agreed to that, I understand.
Yes. I think I would make a lot of people happy if I didn't, but...
Okay, so you would say, style, get rid of the words no more than. You just go 6 years, avoid granting...
Yep.
Resource consents. Avoid granting resource consents for a duration of 6 years.
Nah. Of more than 6 years.
Of more than 6 years.
More than 6 years.
Take just the no.
Just the no.
I read that through a few times and thought...
That would be a surprise decision of the court.
Yes.
I shall write.
So I've got another thing in terms of the definition. (10.3A).
Yes.
So I'm puzzled as to why you have to have seeks to in the stem of that. Wouldn't it just be means a condition that limits or restricts the taking of water under specified circumstances? It either does or it doesn't.
Yep.
Yeah. So you'd be happy to expunge those words?
Sorry, which definition are we on?
Take cessation condition.
Sorry, and get rid of the words what?
Seeks.
Oh, seeks to.
Means a condition. And seeks to, sorry, that limits or restricts. So you need to add an S to limit and
limits.
To restrict.
Or restricts to Tom. Right.
Just double checking to make sure there wasn't anything. Else in here. Thank you.
Okie dokie. I've also got questions about TAs and hydro along the same lines, but before I ask you them, I'll have a cup of tea and think about whether I need to ask them. But I did have a question about plan architecture and. Your Amendment 3 to the Regional Water Plan, which at one point I had up on my screen. Yeah, and your Amendment 3 to the Regional Water Plan. So I know that, I just need to get to where I want to be, looking in your first, your Appendix 1, and in your Appendix 1, you have added three objectives, the first two of which I have said were elegantly drafted, which I thought they were. So that's 10A 1.1 and 10A 1.2. That was my initial impression, and then did not like your 10A 1.3, and I just wanted to talk to you about that a bit more in terms of just in terms of the plan architecture, make sure that we're on the same footing. Make sure we're on the same footing. So in terms of the architecture of this, you've introduced a new objective, which I understand the purpose of that objective 10A 1.3 is to help with assessments of any applications which are non-complying activities, correct?
Non-complying and RDA as well.
And RDA as well.
Well, yeah. Mm.
And the only RDA we've got is our, apart from folk who haven't got all the data that they need for historical use, would be our...
stranded.
Our stranded asset. Yeah. And then the only effects-based matter with the stranded asset, such that it is the need to have a good management practice plan in place.
That, and there's also a discretion around the size, but...
The
size of the additional area.
And a bit like Ms. McIntyre, it wasn't really obvious to me that you needed an objective to pick up on those very limited matters for stranded assets. So that's something that, you know, we need to think about a bit further. But when I had a look at your objective, it occurred to me that that there's no sort of daylight on the word scale, and you would have heard me ask planners when they were jointly impaneled, well, what could scale mean, and amongst other things, it depends really on where the planners, whose interests the planners were representing, but it could mean area was the evidence. It didn't mean, it could mean area, it could mean duration, and rate and volume of take, where you've already got that there. And beyond that, what other things scale could mean weren't really articulated, but the word scale seems to me, I don't actually know what that might mean or how that might be approached outside of, you know, perhaps outside of farming TAs and communities. They may have a different approach to what scale means.
Mm.
And you agree with that, or would you agree with that? What do you mean by scale?
It's hard to define. First and foremost, I would not think that scale would apply to duration. To me, there maybe
no, it's duration.
It is spelled out there.
Yeah.
And we discussed it at length. Like, what is there? How can we capture it most accurately? The reason why we kept scale in there was one. And that was explicit in the discussions, was about the geographical extent of the area to which the water is applied. In my mind as well, there is the deemed permits do not only apply to water takes, they also apply to, some discharge permits and some damming permits. And with a dam, often the damming activity and the water take are separated out. So in my mind, the scale can also might be a useful term to capture activities authorized by deemed permits that apply to damming as well. It's I agree with you that it's perhaps not the most defined term or not the best defined wording. But it is there to intend anything that might come up that isn't really captured by the other words in the plan.
So scale, you say, could apply to an increase in scale for damming activities?
I guess so, yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't imagine that. But, I hadn't thought about that. But that's your evidence? Because if it is, I'll start thinking about it.
Well, it's definitely not captured by rate of take, in my view.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, and we have the impermits that apply to other activities than takes.
Okay, so scale could apply to an increase in scale, whatever that may mean, for both damming and discharge activities, which are deemed permits.
At least you can consider it. Words. Yeah.
All right. So that helps me in terms of the possible range. But insofar as scale means area, and insofar as you've got policies that expressly avoid an increase in area, and they avoid an increase in duration and an increase in historical use, as far as that means in relation to take and volume, then it seems to me you've got a fundamental problem with your plan architecture. You can't both have an objective that contemplates an increase in those variables and policies saying avoid that.
No. The increase in the rate of take and volume, you couldn't have an increase in the consented rate of take or volume. That's not allowed for, that would be a new consent. But for community water supplies, we do allow for an increase above.
I need to take community water supplies and hydro out of this discussion.
Okay,
because there may be, because I know that there's maybe a need which you are responding to, or is a need that you're responding to for population growth.
Yeah.
So so take those two others off the table. That leaves everything else, which is not just primary sector, but everything else. You've got clear policies that close out, avoid durations over 6 years, an increase in area, and an increase in historical use, correct?
Yes, sorry.
So immediately you've got yourself set up with a problem with your drafting, because your objective contemplates an increase in those variables, but the policy closes them down. So the policies that you got don't implement that new objective 10A 1.3. And my proposition, and do you agree with that? They don't.
I agree with you.
They're in conflict. My proposition to you is, what is the problem with, and again, this is said with territorials and TAs are still up for further consideration. But in principle, what is the problem with having your first two objectives, 10A 1.1, 10A 1.2, your three policies, which are policies to do with avoid, and I know you're saying you could simplify those in terms of rolling two into one, and that's fine. So you've got two objectives, three policies which are avoiding certain things, and having a non-complying activity, because whatever is not caught, and that is whatever is not duration, is not area, is not historical use, is a non-complying activity. It immediately imports considerations of merits, about which there's no metric, but then of itself, that's not unusual for non-complying activities. You can't possibly sit here and try and imagine what other activities might be out there in relation to which consent is required, which could be assessed on a merits basis. I honestly couldn't see, apart from there are fundamental issues as to drafting which just don't pass the sniff test, I couldn't see what the issue was unless you were wanting to walk back the avoid policies on duration, area, and historical use. If you wanted to walk that back, you needed to walk it back under the policies rather than under the subjective.
Yeah. And maybe that's the reason why it's in there, because we drafted it with forgetting about the backstop that is offered by the policies. I think when it comes to in the objective, you know, the third objective, the reference to rate of take and volume, we were anticipating, well, what if somebody comes in under the non-complying and applies for a rate of take within the consented limit but above historical use? Policy 10A21 kind of closes that door.
But you wanted it to when you started this process.
Yes, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. But everything else which you have not sought to exert control over, which is everything other than area, duration, and historical use, is still open for consent under a non-complying activity pathway, albeit that there's no policy speaking to those activities, and of itself it's not unusual, but it's just to be assessed on its merits. And again, no guidance on the merits outcome, but that's not unusual either, where you have activities which haven't been imagined or contemplated, but which still have a chance, at least, under a non-complying activity rule. Is that... Yeah, I was just wondering what the problem was that you were trying to fix. Because, I mean, honestly, if you want to walk back your duration and everything else, I think you do it in your policies. You don't, you don't confound the implementation of this plan this way, because I think it will have a confounding effect.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Are you wanting to walk back the policies on avoiding an increase in
no,
area?
No, that's not the intent. No.
Okay. Hmm. Okay, so that's not the intent. It's not what you're wanting to do. All right. Okay. And really, as to the balance of what you write there, I mean, I tended to agree with the planners who didn't support this. You know, it doesn't compromise the implementation of the integrated regional planning framework. I think that's problematic in terms of... you might need to be an oracle to know what's actually coming up in that land and water plan. But is it necessary, I thought, because you've already got 10A 1.1, which says facilitate the effective and efficient transition to a new plan. So I couldn't see what it was achieving, because we already know we want an efficient, effective transition to a new plan.
We didn't... how to put this in right words... the intent was really to signal to consenting officers that they need to apply a precautionary approach, and looking at the effects is not sufficient. It's the duration, that's short-term duration. It's not...
Do you not think that actually is signaled in your 10A 1.1?
Yeah.
Facilitating an efficient, effective transition.
It is, yeah.
So do you agree that's not actually adding anything to the thinking? Agree with that?
I agree, okay. Yeah.
All right. So looking at... so anyway, your answer is no, you are not walking back the avoid duration, longer duration, avoid increasing in areas and avoid historical use. You're not walking back those policies.
I'm speaking for myself
yes,
now.
Yes, speaking for yourself. Yeah. Okay. Because if you are, I'm thinking, well, there just needs to be a different approach.
No.
Now, obviously, a number of other parties have a number of other approaches.
Yep.
You know, they're wanting longer durations. I just wanted to know what you were thinking. You are not walking it back, so that's really helpful. Now, just before we take that tea break and I think about TAs and hydro a bit more, but, you know, looking at Amendment 3 to the... water plan, the operative regional water plan, has introduced about two policies and one objective, I think it's introduced. And that is fine, and I understand that if and when this plan change is made operative, those provisions actually apply to this plan change. Correct?
They need to be made... they need to be brought into this framework, yes.
And does that kind of happen automatically? Because would that happen automatically? Or does it need a resolution of council?
I think it needs a resolution of council,
but it doesn't need a variation.
It does not need a Schedule 1
process. Okay. So... So anyway, all non-complying activities, assuming that the council passes that resolution and Amendment 3 is imported or applies to, you know, Chapter 10A, all non-complying activities would also need to take into account those other provisions in Amendment 3, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And I suppose, insofar as there is some provision for TA and hydro along the lines of what they want, so a longer duration, if the merits-based assessment is taking place under the operative plan, then those provisions would apply to a merits-based assessment under the operative plan, leaving PC7 to deal with duration. That's how it would work.
If it's for a new activity.
Yeah, for a new activity.
Yeah.
For straight-out replacement activity.
Straight-out replacement activity,
yeah.
There needs to be a link. We need to make a link between those new plan provisions and the new Chapter 10A. Mm. So that does not mean that we need to consider these matters under the controlled and the RDA pathway, but when it comes to a non-complying pathway.
Okay. I guess that's where I was wondering. So you don't have to import those matters as matters of control if you had a RDA or matters of control and matters of discretion under those two rule pathways. So mm-hmm. these needn't be applied there, but could be applied in non-complying or could be applied in discretionary.
Yep.
All right. Okay, well, we'll take a break and I'll think more about TAs and hydro, but with TAs, just one final question. For the projects which were the subject matter of further evidence, of those projects, how many would you regard as being a straight out replacement of an existing activity as opposed to a new activity?
I mentioned before Omakau. It wasn't intended to be a strict out replacement at all.
I don't think so. I think it's actually looking for a new water body, that one.
And the other one is possibly Cadrona. Cadrona, I think, is an ML. Well, that's not even at the drawing board, is my understanding. Ms. Irvin might have a better understanding.
So of those projects that have hit your schedule as you know, your alternative pathway schedule, new schedule where you're listing projects. Of those, are they all replacements or are some of those new consents? New activities? Are they?
The majority are new activities.
Majority are so new activities. And so you're proposing to bring new activities completely under PC7?
No.
Okay, so that's what's probably missing.
No, what I proposed to do, or what I suggested as a pathway, is two things. One, a change to policy 10822, which is the policy
on policy.
The duration policy for new takes, and that would take care of the majority of the projects.
Mm. Their merits are still being considered under the operative plan.
Correct.
But on duration, duration, something else is happening. Yeah.
Correct. The RDA, the DA pathway and policy 10A23, as I said before, is just a safety net. It's kind of, it's a bit weird because they take up most of the paper space, but I don't know if they're actually going to be needed. If all of those projects turn out to be basically new schemes.
Well, that's what I was wondering, and that's what I, you know, I've done all sorts of decision trees and pathways, and so homework for you over the next over afternoon tea is to reflect on again on those proposals, such as we've been told, and are they all for new water, or are they replacements? And so I think that court really needs to know that. Yeah. There is a problem, I suspect, with OFA insofar as it's taken from an unreliable source and would go to an unreliable source in terms of availability of water. So I think we would want to think really hard about that separately.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, there's six or seven different projects. I think at least five will be no projects and would not benefit from that DA pathway.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's only there because I drafted it for community water supplies, and I thought it's a neat way to, well, maybe it's not neat, sorry. it's an easy way to have something in place in case you end up with a situation where it's a strict rollover of a community water supply scheme consent.
And so for a strict rollover of the activity, no change, that's what this alternate pathway is for.
That restricted the activity, yeah.
Okay, all righty. I shall think about
discretionary that. Discretionary activity, sorry.
Yep, no, that's all good.
All rise.